Hey, welcome. This is Andy of Andy's Personal Development, and we are currently live in the breakout room. We have an amazing guest to share his expertise and his very valuable and timely information with us. And we want you to remember our three watchwords. They are health, happiness, and prosperity. And for this specific episode, we'll be focusing on more than the health aspect of things than anything else. The episode is entitled The Us Versus Them Paradigm with Dr. Ravi Iyer, MD. So let me give you a bit about this particular individual. He is known as the one who can make it the power for your possible. That's his brand line, the power for your possible. And Dr. Ravi R. Iyer is 2024's fastest rising speaker and expert on people first leadership, and has been recognized as a thought leader and pioneer in the space of blending high performance teams and profitability with exceptionally high levels of employee satisfaction and customer service. But don't take my word for it. Stand by as we welcome Dr. Ravi Iyer into the breakout room live. Dr. Iyer, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you for being with us. Glad to have you. Glad that you took the time to be with us live right here in the breakout room. So, first of all, tell us, basically, let the audience know, Dr. Iyer, when they hear the name Dr. Ravi Iyer, who do you want them to recognize? What does your name represent? What does your brand represent?
Oh, that's a tough question. I hope that my name would represent a space where they can feel safe, where they can feel that they have more options in my presence than they have when I'm not in the room. So that essentially is what I try to achieve in my work as a physician or as a person. When I walk into a room, there should be, by my presence, a clearing, an opening, such that people experience more possibilities than they thought they were having available to them. So the real thing that needs to happen is a space needs to open up where they can see things more clearly than they were before, or they see things differently than what they were seeing before.
Yeah. Great. Thank you for sharing, Dr. Ravi. What drives your passion for the professional level that you have engaged in with regards to your medical expertise?
For me, the purpose of my life has always been about empowerment. And I choose to do that through my work as a physician. So the profession of being a physician is, for me, an instrument, a platform for the work of empowerment of people. And through this work, I myself get empowered.
Actually,
this business of empowerment is not just mine. It is yours. It is everybody's. Life has no other purpose except to be empowered, except to empower people and to be empowered yourself. There's no other purpose for existence other than that. And we do that through various methods, through various platforms, through various channels. Some people do it as an actor, some people do it you know, as in politics, in public service, some people do it being a housewife or, you know, just taking care of a family. And some people do it being a physician. Regardless, it is always the same thing.
Yeah, great, wonderful. So as you would have heard, the theme for this episode is the us versus them paradigm. And I took that basically from your profile information. When you refer to the us versus them, who can we describe as the us and who can we describe as the them?
So everyone in the world individually looks at the rest of the world as them and looks at themselves as us.
Okay.
So us and them are nothing other than us, all of us.
Okay.
Depends on which viewpoint you're sitting.
Right.
When you are looking out, you look at other people as them and I, and it's this. The problem in the us versus them is this idea that the opportunities in your life and the resources in your life are somewhat limited. And this is the fundamental reason why people interact with life from a competition viewpoint, saying that, oh, if I don't get it now, then somebody else will take it. This opportunity will be gone forever. I won't have. So this idea of every opportunity being a limited factor and bound by space and time is the real problem that throws everyone into this us versus them paradigm. Real leaders don't look at life like that. They look at life as if they are the creator of opportunities, not the consumer of opportunities. So because of that, they don't feel in any way constrained by whatever circumstances throws at them. Everything that comes in their life, they see it as something that they can turn to their advantage. They don't see it as a limitation. But people who don't see themselves as creators of opportunity, they look at opportunity as an object, as a situation that they have to own. And if they don't grasp it, if they don't control it, they feel that they don't have any power.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. So let's just switch gears a little bit. And I want to ask you a question with regards to what are the challenges that you are seeing now on the horizon with regards to the power of medicine? And I say that in light of the many AI platforms that seem to be surfacing all over, and people are concerned about the influence and influx of AI with regards to the way they access information and the way they get information. What are some of the challenges that you see, Dr. Iyer, with regards to that kind of technology and the basic doctor to patient reality where that connection takes place and you can actually build a relationship with that patient so much so that they actually trust you to deliver the right kind of medical support that they can get the relief that they seek? What are some of the challenges that you see happening with regards to the influence of AI now?
I'm going to go back a little bit to something that a mentor of mine told me when I was training. And he said, there is a difference between a physician and a technician.
Okay.
A technician looks at disease like a problem to be solved.
Mm-hmm.
And the technician looks at disease as if they cannot solve the problem, it's a win or a lose situation. A physician looks at disease as a circumstance of disempowerment. The approach of a technician is, this disease is a problem that I have to fix and I have to solve the problem. The physician is not concerned about disease primarily as a problem to be solved. He looks at disease in a larger context, and that is, this disease exists and creates a situation of disempowerment.
Okay.
So the purpose of a physician is always on how do I empower the patient, whether or not the disease is solved. How do I empower the patient? How do I make the patient handle this circumstance in a way that allows the patient to move forward?
Right.
AI, no matter how powerful it is, will always be in the realm of technician. AI will bring the power of reductive, inductive, and reasoning intellect for the solution of problems. But AI cannot empower the human being. The AI cannot make the human being feel more competent than he was before. So you can use AI like a tool, like a spanner, and or a screwdriver to manipulate a set circumstances, but you cannot make use AI to drive the engine of humanity forward.
Okay.
The engine of humanity can only be driven by humans, not by AI.
Right.
So, essentially, no matter how much AI comes into medicine, as long as physicians understand that AI is a tool that they can use like a screwdriver or a spanner or a plier to manipulate circumstances, and physicians understand that they still have to do the job of empowering the patient, then what will happen is AI and the physician together will reach a higher level. But if you think AI is going to solve the problem, then you are going to be left with a lot of dissatisfied people at the end of the day.
Wow. Yes.
So the purpose, the role of a physician, no matter what you do, is always going to be from the standpoint of empowerment and service. There's no other role. See, when I walk into the room, my brain is calculating various options of disease, and that is no different than AI. So my brain is an AI. But my brain does not make me a physician.
Right.
My ability to hold your hand and look into your eyes and calm you down and make you feel that you are heard is what makes me a physician.
Right.
So my ability to reason possibilities and decide whether this diagnosis is right or that diagnosis is right does not make me a physician. That only makes me a technician.
Yes. Yeah.
A physician is someone who takes that technical ability and puts it in the context of human connection. And out of that connection, I validate the person in front of me. I validate his existence. I let him know that he matters, he counts. He is not a heartbeat. He is not a bodily function. He is not a mechanism of excretion, or he is not just a pair of lungs. He is a human being who is bigger than the sum of the parts.
Wow. Yes.
So
I love that. Yes, go ahead.
That in essence, and people, so here's the thing, even in the medical field, you will have physicians who behave like technicians. Because they have decided, consciously or unconsciously, they have decided that they are going to stick to just the technical aspect of medicine, do their job, send out the check for the bill, and collect the money and walk to the bank. They are no longer concerned about the human being beyond that. And you will always find physicians who fall into that role. But those people may be wearing a white coat and calling themselves physicians. That doesn't make them a physician. Be a physician, you have to be what they are. You have to be all of them. And you have to be this person who can connect. So a physician is something vastly bigger, much, much bigger than just the ability to solve problems.
A physician
is a custodian of your soul. A technician just handles your body.
Wonderful. I salute you for the manner in which you explain the difference. It is such a huge contrast. And I support the way in which you passionately deliver that information for us as we queuing to the difference between those who are involved in AI technology and the actual physician. So, Dr. Ravi, you have been in tremendous challenging situations from time to time over the 40 years or so that you have been involved in the medical field. When it comes to situations where there is pressure and decisions need to be made on the spot, and maybe a life is hanging in the balance or two or three, how do you maintain that focus to make the right decisions that eventually prove to be successful in the recovery of life and health?
Some of it is a gift, some of it is training. The work I do and the way I do it is different than many others of my profession. I am not saying that I am better, but I will definitely say I am different. When I get up in the morning, I'll give you an example of what I mean by different. When I started practice as a physician, I came out of residency and I put up a shingle and I started. I did not even think that it would be difficult for me to start seeing patients and doing well as a physician. But one of the things I did was I used to go to sleep next to my bed with a bucket of water. And a towel. And the reason for that was when I would wake up in the middle of the night because of my phone or my pager would go up and I would pick up the phone and I would call and I'd talk, my voice, because I've just woken up from sleep, would sound grumpy, would sound as if I was upset. I was not upset, but it would sound like that. To prevent that from happening, I would wet the towel in the water and wash my face before I would answer the call. And I would do that at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. I would do that in a night. I would get woken up 5 or 6 times. And each of those times, I would wash my face and then take the call, answer the call, and then I would hang up and go to sleep. My patients would say, how is it that you sound so bright as if you never sleep? They would say, how is it that you are always bright and cheerful? I woke you up at 2:30 in the morning and you did not sound as if you were waking up from sleep. So The reason why I give that example is you asked yourself what it takes to be calm under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
It takes commitment like that.
Right.
It takes commitment to your patient, to that whatever that you are giving to the patient, it has to be your best.
Right.
There's nothing that you do for the patient that matters less than anything of your own comfort.
Mm.
So if you approach the practice of medicine with that attitude, then pressure does not exist.
Right.
Because when you're in front of the patient, you don't exist. Your sleep doesn't matter. Your body doesn't matter. You don't exist. And when you don't exist, there is no pressure.
Okay.
There is only the situation in front of you.
Right, right, right. Wow.
See, and this is what happens in the best of all the fields. When Michael Jordan is playing basketball, he does not experience pressure.
Yeah.
The people on the sideline watching him and who are placing bets on whether he's going to make that, you know, basket or not, are experiencing pressure.
Right.
But he only experiences the space the moment he experiences the opponent and he experiences the ball. He does not experience pressure.
Yeah.
Wow. That's what I mean. When you are in the game and you are approaching it from the point of view where nothing about you matters, only the person in front, the job matters more than everything about you, then yeah. There is no pressure.
Right.
There is only performance, no pressure.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I love that. I love that. Wonderful. So I want to switch gears a little bit again. And I looked at some of your videos and I found it very, very intriguing with regards to the writing. And I want to just share with the audience a copy of your book. It is entitled The Reaper's Dance, 1,000 Days of COVID. By Dr. Ravi R. Iyer, MD. Tell us a bit about this publication, Dr. Iyer, as we look at the front cover here.
This book is a chronicle of what we handled during the COVID pandemic from mm-hmm. March 2020 through, I would say, July of 2022.
Okay.
The book itself came out of a conversation on Thanksgiving of 2022,
mm-hmm.
where we were talking about the pandemic and the lessons of the pandemic and so on and so forth. And someone said that, you know, you should write your story. And I thought yeah. about it and the idea kind of grew in strength. And I decided to write. I started writing December 10th, and about 61 days later, February 11th, I finished writing the book. The words just flowed. There are books on the pandemic, several of them. They all write about the science of the pandemic, mm-hmm. the science of the virus. I also mm-hmm. talk about it. But my book was more about the human impact, the stories of various, and there are several stories of patients in that book, and they're all true. They're all patients that we had to take care of. I changed yeah. their names, made it fictionalized, their names a little bit, so that
yeah.
you know privacy is maintained, but they are true stories. And the pandemic brought out the best and the worst in humanity.
Yeah.
It unmasked the character of people. When death comes to your door and decides to say, okay, you want to dance with me? Come on, let's see what kind of person you are that you can dance with me.
Oh.
And then, you know, the character of your character becomes revealed.
Wow.
So the Reaper's Dance is about that.
And it
is about the lessons. It is about hope. It is about despair. It is about tragedy. I can, there is a passage that I will read. It is so deeply embedded in my mind that I can recite it from memory.
Yes.
It is in chapter 4. It is called ICU bed number 5.
Uh-huh.
The woman lies in the bed. The nurse adjusts the drapes. You can barely see her. She is buried almost beneath the flexible tubing of the ventilator and the intravenous tubes. A soft Bluetooth speaker plays a playlist. The ventilator motor hiss fills the room. But the woman in ICU bed number 5 does not hear this. She is sedated deep under a propofol-induced sleep, unconscious of the disease that has ravaged her body, that is ravaging her body. Now only the cocktail of drugs dripping through her veins is compelling her life force to remain a tenant in a body that is fast approaching the point where it will become a dwelling unfit for life. I have been this woman's doctor for many years. She did everything right. She covered her masked up, covered her face, stayed away from crowds. She followed my instructions to a T. Her husband and her two children followed everything I told you. Too bad her neighbors did not. Too bad her friends did not. Somewhere out there, someone felt they had a greater right to their maskless breath of air than this woman. And so this beautiful 48-year-old young mother is going to have to give up her right to all her breaths. A 51-year-old man is going to have to watch and say goodbye to his wife through a cell phone video.
Wow.
And a teenage son and daughter will grow up to old age without the breath of a mother fanning their cheeks.
Yeah.
That's a passage from the book.
That's deep. That's deep. That's profound and deep. Wow, it leaves you to really think and go back down memory lane and reflect, Dr. Aya, on how this particular pandemic, as you would have alluded, created the opportunity for some of us to be at our best and for some of us to be at our worst, but also to recognize how very vulnerable our human existence is, and how much we should put so much more value on life, on existence, on sustaining and maintaining health. And even though, as you said, she would have followed all the instructions, she still became a victim of that disease. Wow.
Our health is not in our hands. It is our health is in the collective actions of everyone.
Right.
So, because we are not isolated beings, we are not living in an island. We, what you do impacts what I experience. Mm-hmm. So, the pandemic displayed that. It brought out the connection, the essential connection of humanity.
Right.
And it is this connection when people responded to this connection as being connected, they became heroes.
Right.
They felt moved to come out and help each other.
Right. Yeah.
When people responded to this connection as they were under threat, like an us versus them, they became, their worst animal instincts came out.
So
depending on how you respond to the truth of our human connection, you either become divine or you become a devil. It doesn't matter. Both are in us. Both exist in us. The possibility of both of us, you know, of being the best or the worst exists in every one of us. It is which wolf do you want to feed?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Wow. On that note, how do you distinguish the difference between a leader and someone who just wants to be part of the crowd?
People who are called towards leadership, they have something in them that resonates to a higher vision of themselves with relation to the life they are living. The desire for safety and comfort is universal. Everyone wants to be comfortable. Everyone wants to be safe. Everyone wants to be protected from the unpredictability of life.
Right.
But regardless of that, there are always going to be a few people who are comfortable with risk, comfortable with putting themselves at stake. And these people become the Alexanders, the Genghis Khans, the Julius Caesars of the world. The Martin Luther King, the John F. Kennedys, you know, the real dynamic, inspiratory people of the world.
Right.
And these people, they all, if you look at their lives, whether it is Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, or whether it is Martin Luther King or John F. Kennedy or Roosevelt, you know, it doesn't matter, whichever, you know, Churchill, you will look at, they all have one grounding principle, something that they believe transcends their own life. Mm-hmm. And they hold that as precious. They hold that as more important than anything else.
Yeah.
And then they ground themselves in that one principle. And from there, they cast forth a vision. And that vision forms the story, the narrative that brings the rest of the people to let go of whatever limitations they have, and they step forward and embrace this vision. So that is what is the, you know, I just laid out the scenario of how leadership evolves and how leadership moves forward. But that is how it happens.
Okay.
People who are unable to be comfortable with the risk of that, they want the safety, they want the comfort, and they would prefer to be the part of the crowd. And they will not be, just because they are part of the crowd, they won't, it is not that they can't contribute. They will say, they will ask the leader to show them the way and they will follow, but they will want to be shown the direction.
Yeah.
They will not take the risk for that.
Yeah, it reminds me of a quote by a first century Roman senator by the name of Publius Tacitus.
Okay.
And he would have said, the desire for safety stands against every great and noble enterprise.
Yes.
And you just basically epitomize that specific quote. So I resonate with it because I see the virtue in it and I understand the difference. It's a deep contrast between the leader who wants to take the risks, who is totally convicted by that passionate vision, as opposed to someone who just wants to be safely hidden in the crowd. Wow, truly amazing. Truly amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so the IPL is coming up soon, Dr. Iyer. You were born in Mumbai, is that right?
Yeah, I was born in Mumbai, yeah.
Would you be supporting the Mumbai Indians this time around for the IPL?
I don't watch too much cricket, but my wife does. Yeah.
Okay. And who might she be supporting?
Oh, she's Chennai Kings, I think.
Defending champions, Chennai Kings. Yeah. Mr. Dhoni and company. Okay. I get that. Wonderful. So with regards to your speaking prowess and your speaking ability, how did you get involved in that, in terms of that mode of expression to motivate and inspire people?
I've always been a decent speaker. I'm not.
Yeah.
Listen. I've always been a good. In high school, we actually had formal training in public speaking.
Okay.
So I was fortunate. I got that formal training in public speaking. So so that has, you know, given me the skills to speak. And I was always good at writing. So language and the ability to communicate has been natural to me. If you gave the same, if you asked me to perform mathematics, that's a different game. I would have shown myself as a complete idiot there. I'm very, very poor with math.
Okay.
But in the realm of speaking and in the realm of communicating ideas, see, most people don't understand communication the way I see communication.
Mm-hmm.
See, when I'm saying something, you are not listening to me. You are listening to what you are saying about what I am saying. There's
yes.
a voice in you that takes my words and translates it.
Yeah.
And so when I have to communicate, I can't just say something and then walk away.
Right.
I have to take responsibility and I have to own your listening. I have to somehow penetrate into you and open my way into you so that inner voice that is telling you what I am telling you, that inner voice becomes mine.
Right.
To do that requires me to connect. And to connect, I need to first find an inner space inside me.
Yeah,
I have to connect with myself. And when I connect with myself and I come in your presence, then what happens is I carry that space in me and that space will invite you to open up and
right.
you will connect through that space. That space is what I call the space of communion.
Right.
For communication to happen, first communion has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When there is communion, then there is communication.
Right.
People who understand communication, they understand how to commune. That is where the word community comes from, or commune comes from. Community and commune is connection.
Yeah.
A group of connected people are connected by a common purpose. They are a community. They are a commune. And they communicate. when I get up on stage and I have an audience before me, that audience is my commune, my community. I have to connect with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I connect with them by creating a space which is safe for them to enter.
Right.
And when they enter that space, automatically we are a commune and we can now communicate.
Yes.
That is speaking. Speaking is always a communion.
Mm. Wow. Okay, great. So we've been listening to Dr. Ravi Iyer, MD, a wonderful exponent of speaking, public speaking, and also someone who has been in the medical profession for over 40 years in his area of expertise. We will go now for a quick break, maybe about 27 or 30 seconds, and we'll be right back to wrap up with Dr. Ravi Iyer, MD. Stand by.
FindRadioGuest.com, the place to click to find guests to interview for free. And if you're a radio show booker, podcaster, talk show host, or television producer, then this is the place to get podcasts and radio interviews or promote your books and products as a guest expert sponsor. FindRadioGuest.com. Check it out.
Yeah, so we are right back here live in the breakout room with Dr. Ravi Iyer, and he has shared a wonderful amount of information, transformation information, inspirational information with regards to his medical field, as well as his passion for writing and also his passion for speaking. Dr. Iyer, what do you see as the greatest challenge for humanity today?
The greatest challenge of humanity is for human beings to understand that they are not powerless.
Mm.
That they have immense power available to them. Yeah. They just need to understand that it is they who have to wield it. They have to recognize that.
Yes.
So, right, see, 99.9% of humanity lives life as if it's a story that is spewing forth, and they are in that story, and that story tells them what reality is. But actually, if you look at it, reality is your perception of what happens to you,
mm-hmm.
and then that voice in your head creates a story, a judgment, an interpretation, a classification of what happens to you. Every moment, you know, reality is hitting you, hitting your five senses. Photons are striking your retina to give you images.
Mm-hmm.
Wind is striking your eardrum and gives you sound. Molecules are drifting up your nose and hitting your olfactory nerves and giving you a sense of smell.
Yeah.
Molecules are falling on your tongue and giving you taste. Other molecules are striking your skin and they give you touch. Out of these impacts produce your life for you. They produce the events of your life. The events of your life are nothing more than impacts. They are impacts of molecules hitting your sense organs.
Mm-hmm.
Then you construct a meaning out of those impacts. You construct a story. You construct the possibility of what those impacts can really mean for you. So literally, your life is your construct. The problem is we don't know how to separate our perception of these impacts from the operating mechanism that creates the construct. But these two are not connected inseparably. They can be separated.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can separate them, you suddenly realize that the awareness of your impact, the various awareness of the events of your life is just pure and silent. It is without any interpretation. You can stand in the eye of what I call the sensory cyclone of life, where all these stories, these constructs are spinning around you, and you are standing there in the center just seeing it. And at that point, you can choose which story you want to pay attention to.
Right.
And you can change the direction of your life based on that. Doesn't matter what your past story has been. You can flip it on a dime. You can flip your story.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's deep and that's powerful.
And if you understand how to do that, you can do it and you suddenly realize that you are a true creator of life.
Okay.
You can choose to create anything you want in your life on an instant. Mm. You are no longer a victim of circumstances waiting to only consume life. You are now a creator of life. You are no longer a hoarder. You become a steward.
Okay.
See, people live life as if, what I call the not enough life. They say, oh, I don't have enough time, no, not enough money, not enough health, not enough love, not enough friends, not enough wealth. You know, it's always not enough this, not enough that, not enough, not enough, not enough.
Mm.
But that is because they don't see themselves as creators of their story. They see themselves as consumers of their story.
Yeah.
All right. So because they are consumers of their story, this particular story, which they love so much, they got to capture it now. Otherwise, it's gone. Somebody else will take that story.
Right.
Mm. Or, so as a result, they feel that they have to run all the time.
Yeah.
They feel that is they will run out of time if they don't get it now, if they don't succeed this very instant, it'll never come their way.
Hmm.
See, that is the fallacy. That is what I call the poverty mindset. See, the idea that you don't have enough is a poverty that can't be filled.
Right.
No matter what you give, you still won't have enough.
Exactly. Very, very, very.
So that is coming out of the fact that you don't feel that you can create your opportunities.
Yes. Yeah.
You feel that you can only consume opportunities as they come to you.
Mm. Wow.
And nobody spends time teaching people how to stand in the grounded silence of their own awareness such that they can see the stories of their life spinning around them.
Yeah.
And once you understand how to do that, you can then choose, oh, this story is mine to have. Mm. Today, I will play this story. Tomorrow, I'll play something else.
Right.
And you will give up a story that was dominating 20 years of your life without any regret. You will flip the story on a dime. You will walk through life like an emperor. And you will be able to say goodbye to 20 years of effort and say, bye, I don't need you anymore. I got a new life ahead. And you will walk away just like the way you would change one life and get born into a new one, like that. Every day, overnight, anytime you choose, you'll change your story.
Wow. Wonderful. Yeah.
It is a life of incredible lightness of being. You can walk through life as if you dance in the rain.
Yes. Wow. I have another quote that comes to mind. I can't remember exactly who said this, Dr. Iyer, but it goes like this. I am not who I think I am. I am not who people think I am. But I am who I think people think that I am. And that sounds so much like what you're saying, because instead of being proactive, we are being reactive. Instead of being a producer, we are becoming a consumer. And therefore, when that happens,
there's one step more in that quote.
Yes.
I am. And that's it.
Yes, that's right. Full stop.
Everything else is just an addition.
Right. And I don't need anything else to make me who I am.
Correct.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So we have gone over a little bit of the time, but I want you to now, as we're closing, I want you to just tell those who may be hearing this sometime in the future that are planning to be doctors, they're looking to take up this as a profession, leaders, speakers, what advice would you give them that would help them to have the right kind of mindset as they approach this cherished career?
The essence of being a physician is to love life. You have to love life. If you cannot love life, if you cannot look at other people and literally fall in love with the life that they can lead, and if you cannot see yourself as enabling them to achieve that, then being a physician is really not for you.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, great. Wonderful. So I'm going to put up some information there with regards to how people can make contact with you. You can tell them which one is the most effective and efficient way in which they can reach out to you. And
my website, driyer.com, is the one-stop shop. You can go to every other place that I go to or work with from that one website, driyer.com. There'll be different people coming to that website, some to read the work I do. Other people may come to that website to listen to some of my talks that I have given. And a third category may come to that website to find their way to my clinics to see me as a physician, as a patient. And a fourth category may come to that website from the point of wanting me to come to their event and speak. All four categories can fulfill their goals by coming to that website, www.driyer.com.
Okay, great, wonderful. Thank you very much for sharing that information and for sharing this invaluable time, I think, with us. I don't think we can actually place a value on all the wonderful nuggets that you would have shared with the people. We had a couple of people moving in and out, and someone did send a thumbs up, a like, with regards to the information that you were sharing. But I know that we'll have much more with regards to the views, and I will send that information with you. So we thank you, Dr. Ravi Iyer, for being in the breakout room and for sharing your dynamic information with regards to your profession. The book, it is entitled, I want to get The Reaper's Dance. Can they get it at Amazon?
Yeah, that's where you get it. You just type in All Reaper's right. Dance or type my name and you'll be able to pull it up.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Thank you so very much. So remember the watchwords, people: health, happiness, and prosperity. And we began with basically health. But I'm sure that now we've come to the end of the program that we would have experienced happiness. And when you put those two together, it can give you the opportunity to achieve prosperity, not just with the material things, but prosperity with regards to the most innermost being involved in the valuable things of life that makes sense, that can bring hope, that can bring inspiration and lead you to a place where you can actually make a vital contribution to the betterment of mankind. So until next time, this is Andy of Andy's Personal Development, together with our guest, Dr. Ravi Iyer, saying so long, Godspeed, God bless, Shalom, Namaste. Bye for now. Thank you.
That was wonderful. Thank you.
Yep, we have come.